Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, October 1st, 2016. This is episode 1327. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Jira Service Desk from Atlassian. Jira Service Desk delivers everything your IT team needs out of the box at a cost-effective price. For a free trial of Jira Service Desk, visit Atlassian.com/twit. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to more than 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to Audible.com/techguy.
Well, hey there. Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek. And I'm filling in for Leo Laporte today, who's on a well-deserved vacation. He's been working real hard lately, moving the studio and... he himself didn't move the studio, but he certainly oversaw it, and that was an awful lot of work. So he is relaxing now, and so I'm so happy to be here filling in for him. Now, of course, Leo talks about anything with a chip in it, right? Anything technology. But I'm a specialist in audio and video. I'm the editor of avsforum.com. And I host a podcast here on the Twit Network called Home Theater Geeks. And we're all geeks on this bus for sure. So for the next 3 hours, we get to talk about home theater, audio, video, and all kinds of stuff like that. Joining me today is David Vaughn, a product and Blu-ray reviewer for Sound and Vision Magazine and soundandvision.com. Hey, David.
Hey, Scott. How are you?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Doing great.
Yeah, thanks so much for being here.
No problem. Back at it again.
Back at it again. You and I have done this a couple times.
Yep.
And we're going to be taking calls from listeners about their home theater audio video questions, and happy to talk about all that stuff.
Oh yeah, actually, this is our third studio we've done this in.
That's true. You came and did it in the brick or the cottage,
then yeah. The brick house, yep. Then here.
Yep, absolutely. And so we're very happy to be here and happy to be with all of you. Now, if you want to join the chat room, I sure hope you will, because it's where Leo's brain lives, as he calls it. The kids in the back of the classroom. You can go to irc.twit.tv. You can also join from the Tech Guy Labs website, techguylabs.com. That's the website of this radio show. And David and I will be monitoring the chat room and interacting with you as we can. So I wanted to start by talking a little bit about 4K TVs, which is obviously the big thing in audio video these days, and projectors too. But TVs are the kind of the more important or larger segment of the market. And from what everything I've read and seen, the sales of 4K TVs is far exceeding what HD TVs did at this stage of their development.
Right.
And it seems to me that part of the reason for that is that the manufacturers have just started making 4K TVs at almost every size. You almost can't buy an HD TV anymore.
Yeah, and they're commodities from day one. I mean, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, they're commodity prices. You can go into Costco or Sam's or Walmart or whatever and buy a 4K TV for under $1,000.
Easy.
Way under $1,000.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, it's not surprising that the sales are going through the roof because really sort of that's all that's available. And as you say, the prices have come down precipitously.
Right.
Very, very, very quickly. But as I've always said, the increase in pixel count, right, from HD, which is 2 million pixels, roughly 1920 by 1080, up to 8 million pixels, which is 3840 by 2160, is not that important. Not nearly as important as the increase in pixels from standard definition, which we had for 50 years, up to HD, which was about a decade ago. That made a big difference. You could really see the difference there. But from 1080p to Ultra HD, not that big a difference, do you think?
No.
In terms of perception.
Mostly because people sit too far from their TV. If you get close to the TV, I think you can see a perceptible difference.
Yes,
but
yes.
From abnormal viewing distances, absolutely not.
Yeah.
I have an 88-inch front projection screen, mm-hmm. and I could put a regular DVD in.
Mm-hmm.
And from 35 feet away, it looks HD.
Yeah,
I mean, it looks really good.
Yeah,
the closer you get, the worse it looks.
Mm-hmm.
From 10 feet away, from an 88-inch screen, which is about the right distance, 4K, although mine's a 4K projector,
mm-hmm.
I can tell a little bit of difference, but to me, the biggest difference with 4K is the wider color gamut and the high dynamic range. To me, that's the selling point.
I couldn't agree with you more. That's exactly right. High dynamic range and wider color gamut, greater range of colors, greater range of brightness levels from black to white or darkest to brightest really makes a tremendous difference that you can see easily across the room.
Definitely. And for me personally, I watch a lot of Ultra HD discs. I think I've seen most everyone that's been released thus far.
Mm-hmm.
And I really notice it, and my wife notices, when we switch away from the UHD movie back to regular TV,
mm-hmm.
regular HDTV looks dull.
Mm.
The colors just don't pop. Mm-hmm. It's not as crisp. We talk about the bright highlights that HDR offers. It's also the varying shades of gray on the lower end of the spectrums.
Mm-hmm.
Shadow details just so much more inviting and, mm-hmm. and much better.
Plus the fact that you can see details in the bright end. You can see much brighter what are called specular highlights, right? So little tiny reflections of the sun off mm-hmm. of a reflective surface, something like that, as well as detail in the dark end, the detail in the shadows at the same time
yes.
in the same image.
Yes.
Which you can't do with standard dynamic range.
No, definitely not. So, it just gives that kind of flat, compressed, somewhat image.
Yeah, exactly. And many modern TVs now have this capability. Projectors are starting to catch on. They're lagging a little bit behind on the HDR curve, I think.
The biggest problem thus far is that all the discs, which is basically our content right now.
Mm-hmm. There's more, but we'll get to that in a second.
But they're mastered for flat panels. They aren't mastered for a front projector. So, I mean, they're looking for something that can do 1,000 nits or 3,000 nits or 5,000 nits. Some of the titles are actually being mastered at 10,000 nits.
Really?
Yeah,
that's
the full spec,
right?
And
but no TV,
no TV can do 10,000
anywhere near that.
That's, I guess, the ultimate goal.
Right.
And I may have misspoke. Maybe it's 4,000.
I think
4,000 is the highest.
Is the highest that they're at, that in the studio grading suite. They're grading to that.
Correct. And my projector on what our colleague Chris Deering likes to say is a postage stamp screen at 88 inches, I can get 150 nits pretty comfortably. And
mm-hmm.
that's with my iris closed down and somewhat. I can actually have it -6.
Mm, this term nits really refers to the amount of light that you're
Correct.
Seeing off the screen. And in standard dynamic range, the most that you would want to see that the things were mastered to was 100 nits.
Right.
Now typically they're mastered to 1,000 nits or maybe even 4,000, so a factor of 10 or more. And then you have to have a TV, obviously, that can do more than 100 nits, and we have a lot of those these days. But they also have to be able to interpret what's called the metadata.
Right.
Right? Because the HDR signal includes this extra data that you don't see in the picture or hear anything of it, but it informs the TV, hey, here's how I was mastered.
Correct.
So there's an awful lot to talk about, and we're going to talk about all of it today. And we're also going to answer your questions. All you have to do is give us a call at 888-ASK-LEO. Though, of course, today you're going to be asking Scott and Dave. That's 888-827-5536. And speaking of the phone number, when you call, you will be first talking with Heather Hammond, the phone ranger. And there's Heather. How you doing, Heather?
Great.
So glad to see you, although I don't really see you. I guess I do on the monitor here. But, yeah, thanks so much for being here and preparing folks for their moment in the sun. Anyway, we're just about ready to go to a break. By the way, if you miss anything, be sure to go to techguylabs.com, where James Druvo is writing everything down. And we'll be back just after this commercial break. I'm Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And we're rocking out here at the Tech Guy Show. I'm Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And I'm here with David Vaughn. He's a Blu-ray and Ultra HD Blu-ray reviewer for Sound and Vision. And we had a question in the chat room about what was your favorite Ultra HD Blu-ray?
Well, spoiler alert, because it's going to be in an upcoming issue. actually, Sony just released The Shallows.
Oh, I hadn't seen that
Which is not a very good movie. I didn't particularly care for it. I think they should have called it Ways to Tempt Darwin's Law.
okay.
But it looks absolutely spectacular. The beginning sequence of the movie has our heroine driving to the beach through this forested jungle with the sunshine coming through the trees. So the spectacle highlights that you talked about are really good there. And then she gets to the beach and the green background with the crystal blue water and the sand, and it looks great. Then you go out, there's some great underwater shots that just look, again, so inviting and fantastic. And then as far as the audio is great on that disc as well. It's a good combo disc.
Is it Atmos?
It is Atmos. Okay. From the standpoint of the waves move, you know, through the room from left to right, back to front, you know, as they crash down. It's very, very good. But the presentation was much better than the movie.
Now, isn't that often the case?
Yeah, unfortunately it is.
Unfortunately it is, I know.
Yeah, I mean, The Martian is a very good one. The re-release that had the Atmos mix and the extended version of the film that I actually enjoyed. That's a good one. Lone Survivor has a great, that's DTS-X mix.
Oh, okay.
On that.
And by the way, what we're talking about here in terms of Atmos and DTS-X are two different, what are called immersive sound formats, where you have not only speakers around you, but speakers overhead as well.
Correct.
And it gives you a real three-dimensional, what's called an immersive sound field. And that can be so much more engaging than simple surround of speakers just around you in a lateral array.
Oh, definitely. And if you turn it off, like I'll turn it off to do some testing, it's amazing how much you miss it. I mean, it really does add something to it. I know you go to the theater a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, to see movies in Atmos. I'm fortunate enough or crazy enough to put it in at my home. So
I'm just about to do that. I didn't have it up till now, but my receiver died and I just got a new Denon.
Okay.
And which has Atmos. And now I've got to pick some speakers to go overhead and, you know, it's another level of complexity.
Oh, yeah. Are you going to put in ceiling or are you going to do the reflective speakers?
No. I'm going to try them both.
Okay.
And I will tell you that those who may not be familiar with this, to put those speakers on the ceiling, real speakers on the ceiling, is one way to go. But some people can't do that. And so what Dolby has come up with is something really interesting, which are what are called up-firing or Atmos-enabled speakers that sit on top of your speakers on the floor and shoot upwards and bounce off the ceiling so that you get the sense of sound coming from above. It's a brilliant idea. You know, some sound leaks out from the sides and you get it directly rather than up to the ceiling and back. But they do a good job of minimizing that.
Yeah, and my Atmos install is a little different because I didn't follow Dolby's spec.
Bad boy.
And that I use tri-pole speakers on the sides and the rear, and I have them up above head height.
Because for your surrounds.
For my surrounds. in my secondary system, I had surround speakers that were ear height. They overpower you. That's all you hear. Mm-hmm. And I just don't like that feeling of the surrounds drowning out what's, you know, the main voices and stuff coming from the center speaker.
Right, exactly.
So I prefer them up high. And in fact, recently in my secondary system, I did put some surround speakers, in-wall surround speakers in that are direct radiating speakers, but I put them up high.
Mm-hmm.
I put them up, 3 feet from the ceiling or so, mm-hmm. 3 feet down.
Right. But you also have speakers on my ceiling.
I lowered the ceiling in my room in order to put Atmos in.
Wow. That's dedication.
That was dedication. That's what I told my wife. I had to do it for my job.
Right. Of course. Absolutely. Well, you know what? We've got some calls lined up. Let's take one, shall we? I'm going to make sure I'm pressing the right button here. I am going to talk with Kenny in Springfield, Missouri. Hey, Kenny. It's Scott Wilkinson. How are you?
Hello. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. How about yourself?
I'm doing good.
What can we do for you?
Yes. I was looking for the smallest television that would be what I call accessible. What I mean by that is, when you go through the menus or flip the channels, it would actually have a speech output that'll read you the menus or the channels and so forth.
Are you vision impaired?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a pretty good question. I'm afraid I don't know the answer to that, but I do know somebody in the chat room who might. Hamit is in the chat room. He's a regular viewer of Home Theater Geeks, and he also is visually impaired, so he might have something to say, or somebody else in the chat room might as well. Certainly, you can do that on a computer, right? There are screen readers for computers.
Yes, and I already have the Apple TV fourth generation, and so
does that do it as well?
Well, it'll read the Apple content stuff, but it won't read, you know, the television
menu. Sure, of course.
Yes,
David, do you know of any TV that does that? I don't.
I have never seen one.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna
one, and it's a Samsung. Mm-hmm. I don't know if all the TVs will adopt something like this. It's a 5500 series. It's a J series.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a 32 inch. I was just wanting other choice.
I don't know that there is very much choice, to tell you the truth. The Samsung J series, so that's a 2015 model. If it's in a 2015, it's probably in a 2016. Those model numbers have a K in them. The whole study of model numbers is actually quite interesting. But anyway, so boy, that's a good question. I'm going to throw that one out to the chat room. Here, Friendly Manitoba says, my Samsung with Tizen software, that's their operating system, Tizen, has that. So that may very well be something that's innate in the Tizen software in Samsung TVs. J6300 model, Friendly Manitoba also is telling me.
Okay, well, thank you.
My pleasure. Sorry we couldn't be of more help, but keep listening, because if we find out any more information, we'll certainly pass it along.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. So, that's a really interesting question.
Very interesting.
Accessibility is an important topic.
Yeah. For those of us who don't necessarily need it, maybe someday, because my eyes are not as good as they used to be, it's just something that we don't use. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like HDMI CIC. I don't use it.
CEC,
or what? See, I can't even get it right. I don't use it. I don't want to use it because it causes more problems for me when it's turned on. So
right, exactly. That's consumer electronic control. It's a way of integrating the control of all your electronics over HDMI. We'll be right back with a bunch more, so stick around. It's Scott Wilkinson, the Home Theater Geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
More Tech Guy coming up in just a bit. Our show today brought to you by the Jira Service Desk from Atlassian. You know, I've always talked about how much we use Atlassian. We use HipChat to keep track of everything that's going on. We have like 20 different HipChat channels, everything from the new studio to engineering to sales. It's a really great tool. And then we use Confluence to keep track of projects. We're really all in on Atlassian. The Jira Service Desk is the latest great tool from Atlassian. If you're tired of clunky support tools that are a pain to use, you're going to want to modernize your IT support with Jira Service Desk from Atlassian. And by the way, get a free shirt. It's like up, up, down, down, left, right for your IT team. I love it. The Konami code. They're geeks. You can tell. Jira Service Desk is a new service management tool from Jira Software, J-I-R-A, that IT teams will love to use. Actually, it's from Atlassian, A-T-L-A-S-S-I-A-N. You know Atlassian. It's built on the Jira platform, which we've used many times to keep track of. In fact, we're using Jira now to keep track of tasks in the office. But we used it, of course, with development of our website and our apps. Jira Service Desk is a great addition. It delivers everything your IT team needs out of the box. It's very cost-effective. You get customers an easy way to ask for help. You can help your customer support agents be productive, from putting out fires to helping employees get stuff done. Of course, you're going to stay on top of service-level agreements with dynamic queues and mobile alerts. You can automate repetitive tasks so your agents can focus on solving the important stuff. It's easy to set up and, frankly, so affordable, you don't even need your boss's approval. And by the way, no learning curve at all. This is so easy. So get the free shirt and the free trial of Jira Service Desk at Atlassian, A-T-L-A-S-S-I-A-N, Atlassian.com/twit. If you're listening right now and you're the first 100 signups, you'll get that free shirt. But you got to hurry over there. I didn't realize they only have 100 of them. Atlassian.com/twit. See why over 20,000 IT teams love Jira Service Desk. Try it free. Atlassian.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support. And now back to the tech guy.
Now, normally at this time of the show, I would be appearing on this monitor right behind me and talking with Leo for about 10 minutes. But I thought it might not be such a good idea to talk to myself. So
it's okay to talk to yourself. You just can't answer yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Or can you be in two places at once? Is another question. So instead, we're going to go talk to somebody else. How about Louie in Orange County? Where is the call? There it is. Louie, hey, you're on with Scott Wilkinson and David Vaughn. How are you?
How you doing?
Good, thanks. How can we help you?
FM analog signal. Before I go up on the roof, is it what is the key? Height, quality of the antenna, or direction?
Okay, you're talking about a radio signal.
FM, yes.
FM radio. Well, I don't think height is – it depends. It depends on where you are with respect to the broadcast tower. You know, if you're in a flat area and the broadcast tower is on a mountain some distance away, but there's a good line of sight, then you probably don't even need a rooftop antenna. I mean, an indoor antenna should work just fine. Normally, I answer questions about antennas for TV signals. And when your note here said analog signal, I went, what? There are no analog TV signals, but you're talking about radio, so I understand that now. So I don't think – let me ask you where you are with respect to the broadcast tower geographically. I mean, are you in a good –
The particular station is about – I would say it's pretty much level with us, and it's about between maybe 6 and maybe at most 10 miles away as far as its broadcast.
Mm-hmm. And there aren't any big obstructions between you and the broadcast tower?
No, other than the normal size apartments and condo type buildings.
Mm-hmm. Well, that shouldn't really be a problem. I think
some days it comes in fuzzy, other days it comes in as strong as any of the other ones coming out of L.A. and Mount Wilson.
Huh.
I mean, a rooftop antenna will definitely help. I get my FM signals from my HDTV antenna that I installed 17 years ago, but that's how I get any FM, unless, although these days I just use a Squeezebox Touch to get my radio, because I can get local radio through that. Mm-hmm. A lot of receivers have local radio on them.
Streaming, you mean.
Pretty much if it's on your roof, I think you're going to not have any problems at all, because you're removing the obstruction that is your house that can block the signal.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Now, directional, that is pointing it in a certain direction, might be good if your antenna is directional, which TV antennas are.
Right.
So, you know, what I have on my house is it's only for receiving broadcast TV, but it's on what's called a rotor. And I have a control in my theater with a little dial, and I can dial it, and the antenna on the roof goes and moves around.
I used to have that on my analog, man, 40 years ago.
So, you know, that may be an important thing depending on the type of antenna you get. But and I agree with Dave totally that putting it on your roof is going to give you a better result than anything you can do inside the house.
Now, to max out with this particular station, the days it's not, you know, it's fuzzy, my intention is to go up there and spin it myself and see if I can get it as clear as any of the other stations.
Mm-hmm.
That's one way of finding out as far as direction.
Sure, but when you do... Well, I guess you could take a radio up there with you.
Yeah, or just turn the antenna. I would also find out where the antenna is. It probably wouldn't hurt to point your antenna in that direction if that's the station that you really want. But if you find out where it's broadcasting from...
Yeah, that's what he's saying, though. But my thought is, if you're up on the roof and you're... relocating the antenna, then you have to climb down, listen and see if it's good, climb back up, change it again. You know, that's not very practical. I think directionality is more important than height in this case.
Falls off, that's fine. I'll be down listening to it.
Okay, so anyway, I think height is probably not an issue in your case. Directionality may very well be the bigger concern.
All right, so that's what it'll take care of. You know, you guys are talking about this Atmos. Mm-hmm. When I first started hearing about these theaters and stuff, I got a nice surround sound in the house.
Yeah.
I don't know if you'll agree with it. A V35, a Bose system. It sounds really good in the area of the house that I have it in.
Mm-hmm.
My idea was to direct or at least the rear speakers upwards towards the ceiling to get reflective, middle of the room.
I don't recommend that.
Don't do it.
Nope. No, they're not designed for that purpose. These up-firing Dolby Atmos-enabled speakers are very specifically designed to focus the sound in one direction. Now, they're not perfect at it, but they're a lot better at it than your typical general speaker. So it would not be very effective to do that. And so,
plus the up mixers in DTS:X, their Neural X and the Dolby Surround
up mixer. Yeah.
They steer sound specifically to those overhead speakers. And when the AVR says, okay, there's Atmos speakers installed or overhead speakers installed, their algorithm will say, okay, this sound's supposed to be there, and they move it there,
right.
And it does a pretty darn good job of
really it. Really good job.
Yes, very, very good.
Absolutely. In fact, my colleague Mark Henninger at AVS Forum prefers to listen to two-channel music that way.
Wow.
He really likes it, and I agree with him. What I've heard of it is it's just wonderful. But I don't do what you're suggesting. It's not going to work very well.
All right, good.
All right.
That answers all my questions.
All right. Thanks so much for calling.
Thanks.
All right. So let's see. Do we have another call? I think we do. I'm going to go to Leo in Anaheim. Man, that's pretty good. Here we go. Leo in Anaheim. How are you?
I'm fine, Scott. Hey, Scott, I was wondering, my brother-in-law has a chip on his shoulder. Can you help me with that chip?
Sadly, not.
Okay, all right, now my real question. I was wondering what you thought of the analogy of Mustangs being built with 800 horsepower, but you can only get the 800 horsepower with 110% octane fuel that you can't buy. And that's how I feel the 4K TVs are right now. You've got the power, but the information to get that power is so limited that I feel that the time to wait should be maybe another 6 or 7 months, maybe around, Super Bowl time.
Well, this is a great, great question. We were talking about the proliferation of 4K TVs and so on, but what about the content? We didn't mention that, and you bring that up, and it's perfect. It's exactly the point that needs to be made. There isn't very much yet, just like there wasn't very much HD content when it first came out, right? And so people were watching DVDs, standard definition, up upscaled to HD. Now, eventually, more stations came online. Blu-ray and HD DVD duked it out for a while, and now they're finally it's Blu-ray. And streaming, you can get HD streaming now all over the place. And so the same problem is coming up now with 4K. There are 4K streaming options from Netflix, Amazon, Vudu.
YouTube?
YouTube even.
YouTube has it.
Fandango Now has it. That used to be called, I think that used to be MGo.
Yes.
There's also, I don't know. Sorry?
Scott, my dilemma is I don't watch a lot of movies on television. I watch news programs and a lot of nature programs.
Yep.
And the TV broadcasters, they haven't even upgraded to 1080p.
You know what? Hang on the line. This is a really important topic. We're going to keep talking about it. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right. I'm feeling cool and groovy right about now. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And we're talking with Leo about, not our Leo, not Leo Laporte, but another Leo calling in from Anaheim, California, about 4K content and the paucity thereof. You know, we talked about streaming and so on.
Before you get going, the question I have is, the HD information is coming through. It's in 1080i. The broadcasters haven't even upgraded to 1080p yet.
Yeah.
So what am I going to think of? They're going to spend the money to go to 1080 or get the 4K with the bandwidth being double? Won't even upgrade to 1080p?
Yeah, this is a very good question, and we don't really know all the answers yet. The broadcast standard for 4K or UHD, Ultra HD, is called ATSC 3.0. Currently, we're using ATSC 1.0. ATSC stands for Advanced Television Systems Committee. And they're the ones responsible for codifying and standardizing the broadcast signal for HD and now for UHD. And that's not even been deployed yet. It's not even finished yet. They hope to finish it by the end of the year. It's going to use a much more efficient codec or encoding scheme, which will bring down the bandwidth requirements pretty significantly over the current one, which is required because, as you said, the bandwidth, there's much more data being pumped down that pipe. So, but we don't know exactly what's going to happen with that. I've always said, and Leo Laporte agrees, that broadcast HD looks better than cable or satellite generally, because those are more compressed than they are over the air. But what's going to happen with ATSC 3.0? I don't know. They're working really hard to finish it as fast as possible. Korea and Japan are also on board working very hard. They want to have it ready for the 2018 Olympics, Winter Olympics in Seoul, and the 2020 Summer Olympics in Tokyo. And I imagine they'll probably make it. I think we just did finally have an audio standard selected, which is going to be what's called MPEG-H in Europe and Dolby AC4 in the U.S. But the fact that that was only just recently even selected and decided upon means it's not quite done yet. So all we can do for 4K content right now is streaming and Ultra HD Blu-ray. And which is by far the better.
Before you let me go,
yeah,
you know where I can go. I'm a very, very big fan of SACDs.
Mm.
And I only have about 15 of them. But it's fantastic to listen to those when the whole room opens up and I hear things I've never heard before.
Yeah. SACD.
Do you know where I can get those?
Amazon has them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. So for those that don't know, SACD is a sort of super CD audio format, and you need an SACD player, a player that's capable of playing them, and it does offer a better quality, better sound quality than CD, at least if you have the audio equipment necessary to render it fully. So
I do. Hey, Scott, your FM feed on KFI, the volume level is much lower than when you go to a commercial break. I just didn't know if the engineers knew that.
Oh, okay. Thanks so much.
They do now.
Thanks, Scott.
I'm not sure if Heather is really trying to reach me or not. No, she's not. She's just laughing and having a grand old time. Okay, very good.
Tell her to keep me on hold.
Okay. Thanks, Leo. Really appreciate it. Okay, let's see here.
Line four.
Line four. Yeah, that's Barbara. A good question. Barbara is in... where is Barbara? She is in...
L.A.
L.A. Hey, Barbara, how you doing?
Hi, I'm doing fine. It's so good to be talking to you. I have to tell you this. I love your hearty laugh.
Oh, thank you so much. I so appreciate that.
Okay.
My wife likes it, too. She actually, you know, she's in the other room, and I'm watching a comedy, and I'll laugh hilariously, and she'll go, man, that's a... Well, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Okay.
How can we help you?
What I'm going to talk about, I think many people are probably in the same boat. I'm a disabled senior, not that they're in that boat.
Well, there are plenty of people in that boat, I'd say.
Some are, yes. Mm-hmm. I'm very low income, and so, but I'm electronically, I've kept up with things over the years.
Good for you. So many seniors don't, and I applaud you for doing so. That's great.
Yeah. So my problem is I cannot afford to pay for higher speed, for the internet. And, of course, I'm watching various things on my TV and on my smartphone from my computer. And the problem is I have so much buffering because I can only afford the basic speed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering, is there any viable solution for people who can't afford to pay for those higher speeds that would improve the buffering situation?
Boy, that's a great question.
Well, I have a suggestion. I mean, if it's Netflix, you can go on your computer and you can actually turn the quality of Netflix down in their settings.
Right.
To lower it to where it isn't trying to send you, HD. It could be just
right.
Standard definition.
Now, doesn't Netflix do that automatically? I was under the impression that it did, but I suppose you could force it.
Yeah, you may be able to force it because maybe it's right on the edge.
But I do a lot of video, not a whole lot, but enough I want to enjoy it.
Of course.
I can't do it anymore.
Sure.
And I watch other things besides Netflix.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, yeah, you watch other streaming sources as well.
Yeah.
Creamy Corn Cob is actually asking about your router.
Okay. It's an old AT&T router.
Mm-hmm. You might be able to upgrade that. That might help. I mean, I think your basic problem is, as you have identified, that your bandwidth coming into your house is simply low because you need to keep money in check and you have to pay for a lower – you can only afford a lower tier of service, a lower speed.
Right.
There has to be a way of – I wonder if there's a way if there's any sort of device that will buffer the incoming stream. I have to do a little research on this.
All right.
A buffer, if you had a local device that took the stream and had some memory in it that buffered it for a certain amount of time and then fed it to your TV, and then if the stream coming from the internet was interrupted, you'd have a little time in that local buffer to compensate for that. I'm going to have to see if I can figure that out.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing, if you're AT&T, you're DSL. Which is
a lower speed anyway.
It's shared access also. Mm-hmm. If you rent your equipment from your provider, you may want to check with them to see if they have newer equipment available.
If yours is an old one.
It's paid for.
Okay. Because I know with cable, Comcast went to DOCSIS 3. And you needed a new modem for that.
But that was cable.
Yeah, that was cable. I'm not sure with DSL.
With streaming, yeah, exactly.
Does the router make a difference?
I can't see how it would, but Creamy Corn Cob thinks it might. So that would be something to investigate, I'd say.
Wait, could you say the name again?
One of our members of our chat room.
All right.
Whose name is Creamy Corn Cob. He said something about maybe improve your router. I wouldn't think that would have that much difference, but since you say that it's an old router, you may get improved performance by upgrading the router. And, your service provider is AT&T, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so contacting them and saying, can I get an updated router might be one avenue of investigation. Oh, and UJ in the chat room is asking, is the firmware updated in your router?
Know.
That may be something else to investigate as well.
I don't even know how to check on that.
Well, that would be something to call AT&T about.
All right.
And another chat room guy, and believe me, the chat room is Leo's brain, and they're my brain too, says you should get a new modem router from AT&T, turn off the routing function, get a new...
And then get a separate router.
Yeah.
Because it'll be quicker, not all being in one box.
That's
more efficient.
Router?
Yeah. So a new router from AT&T, turn off the routing function in the AT&T device, and then get a separate router with better, faster switching, like from a company called Asus. Hey,
okay.
Thanks so much for the call. We'll be right
Thank
back.
You.
It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back after this.
Bye-bye.
Hey, you know what? Leo has sent us a message in a bottle, and I think we really should hear it. Check it out.
We'll have more Tech Guy podcast in just a moment. I want to thank ZipRecruiter for making the podcast possible and, frankly, for giving us some of our best employees. If you're in the position of hiring for your company, maybe you're the company and you've decided to get some help, or you're, head of the HR department, you got to hire somebody fast. Problem with hiring, of course, is you're doing it when you're shorthanded, always. So you want to make it easy. But at the same time, you know how important it is that you get the right person. And you know what? The right person's out there. The trick is, how do you reach them? They may not be on the job board you're going to use. They may not be looking at Twitter or wherever you're posting your listing. You want to get it everywhere, right? But then if you get it everywhere, that means you're getting a lot of applicants, some of whom you don't want. Well, how do you handle that? Well, ZipRecruiter is a perfect solution for all of this. First, you post once to ZipRecruiter, and it automatically goes to more than 100 job boards, including social networks like Facebook and Twitter, with a single click, which is really nice. So you're getting it in front of the maximum number of people, including that one person that you're trying to, that needle in the haystack you're trying to hire. Then, instead of having those people call you or email you, it goes into the ZipRecruiter interface, which is great. You'll immediately get responses, by the way, within 24 hours, because ZipRecruiter's already got more than 6 million current resumes they're going to match it with. So they start rolling in. They have a really nice, sophisticated way to find the right people. You can have your own criteria. You can also have, questionnaires with multiple choice or essay questions. You have ways of kind of screening them out very fast. The mobile apply process is great, too, because it means, and nowadays applicants, a lot of applicants, they're on mobile. They can apply via mobile on ZipRecruiter.com. No more juggling emails, no more calls to your office. You can also have many people help. You can have multiple users on your account, don't worry. So you don't have to do it all. ZipRecruiter has now been used by over 1 million businesses. I love this number because if you go to the webpage, it goes up every time I look at it. 1 million businesses. And, of course, hundreds of the Fortune 500. And more than 125 million candidate applications have been delivered. Go to ZipRecruiter, ZipRecruiter.com/twit. We've actually set up a free trial for you so you can get a sense of what ZipRecruiter can do. I think you'll be impressed. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. Thank you, ZipRecruiter, for believing in us and supporting the Tech Guy podcast. And you should give them a try. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. Now back to the Tech Guy.
Hey, everybody. Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, who's on vacation. Lucky dog.
Yeah.
Cruising, actually, right?
Cruising, I think. Yeah, exactly. And I think it's almost over. I think he's back pretty soon, the next couple days. So he's probably feeling like, no, I don't want to go back. But he'll be back. He'll be back next week. Absolutely. But in the meantime, I'm here with David Vaughn, Blu-ray and product reviewer for Sound and Vision and soundandvision.com. David, thanks again for being here.
No problem.
Yeah.
Enjoying the heck out of it.
Yeah, I always do too. So we got a question in the chat room during the break about the Ultra HD Blu-ray players. There are now three on the market, and we're expecting another one or two pretty soon. The ones that are on the market now are the Samsung, Philips, and Panasonic.
Correct.
Well, and the Xbox One S.
Correct.
Which also does Ultra HD Blu-ray, but it is more limited. And the one that everyone's waiting for is from a company called Oppo. And, you know, they make the Blu-ray player that all of our colleagues use.
Yep.
I have one. You have one.
I have two, three, four. I have four.
Four of them.
I have four of them throughout the house.
Man. Okay. All right. And we're all waiting on pins and needles for their Ultra HD Blu-ray player, which has been announced that it's going to sell for $500.
Yeah.
Which I was expecting it to be twice that.
Well, and frankly, all the UHD players, with the exception of the Panasonic. The Panasonic was $799.
$800.
We're relatively priced. I paid $399 for the Samsung.
For the Samsung. Philips is about the same.
Yeah. I mean, when HD DVD came out, theirs was a bargain at $500 mm-hmm. for the thing that looked like a 1982 VCR because mm-hmm. it was an ugly box.
Big, giant, ugly box.
Massive
Man,
box.
Yeah.
But the Oppo's the best looking player of all of them, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, just looking at the screenshots of it and their pedigree for producing quality players is bar none the best in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the other thing about that one and the other standalone players is that they also stream.
Correct.
Right? So they have Netflix and Amazon and all the normal streaming sources. The Xbox One S, I think, does not.
No, the Xbox One S streams. It won't bit stream.
Okay, that's right. And then this is important, and we got a question in the chat room about why this is important. And it's important for Dolby Atmos. We were talking last hour about Atmos and how that gives you speakers, basically sound coming from overhead as well as around you. And this provides a much more immersive, engaging audio experience. But the player, the source device that provides that to the AV receiver, has to send it in the form of an encoded bitstream.
Correct.
And so the player needs to be able to do that. And all these standalone or dedicated Ultra HD Blu-ray players do that. But the Xbox One S does not.
Yeah. A lot of people pre-bought them thinking that it would do that, and then they get it home and it doesn't, and it went right back. It's handicapped a little bit.
Yeah. The other handicap it has is that it only has one HDMI output.
Ah.
And most of these other players, I think maybe all of them, have two.
Correct.
Why is that important? Because if you have an older AV receiver that does not recognize, that does not pass 4K through it without downshifting it or not even dealing with it and just blocking it, then what do you do? Well, you connect one of the HDMI outputs from the player directly to your 4K TV and the other one to the AV receiver, which then deals with the audio only.
Correct. And furthermore, if you have a long HDMI run to your display, mm-hmm. stripping out the audio lowers the bandwidth demands
you know
on it as well.
I hadn't thought of that,
yeah.
But that makes some sense.
It can make a difference. I did an article.
It's not that much.
It's not that much, but I did an article earlier this year regarding long HDMI cables. Our response to that article was through the roof as far as people reading it, emails and comments and such. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm in the process of doing a second one follow-up because more solutions have come out because when the UHD products launched, a lot of HDMI cables did not work. They were advertised for 4K. They didn't work with 4K.
You know, I've heard that same comment, and I've always said, you know, as long as the HDMI cable is properly constructed and properly terminated and all the cables, the little wires inside are connected well, you know, as long as it can carry 18 gigabits per second, which is the current Blu-ray bandwidth, HDMI bandwidth, it should work.
Yeah, well, what had happened was the Redmire chip used in a lot of active cables wouldn't work past 10.2 gigabits per second.
Now, isn't that interesting?
Because of the chip. Now, they've come out with revision 2 of the chip, which does work for 18 gigabits, mm-hmm. but it's the luck of the draw. A lot of the chips, you may get five cables from the same manufacturer. Three will work, two won't.
Oh, wow.
So I'm going to be going through some testing here in the next month and have an article coming out. If you really want it to work, get a fiber cable. They tend to work, so I have a few of those coming to
now
test.
That's a cable where it takes HDMI, converts it into fiber optics.
Correct.
Runs that along the fiber optics and then converts it back to HDMI at the other end.
Correct. Using the 5 millivolt signal, pin and the HDMI cable.
You know, this came up just this week when I was at Leo Laporte's house. I was calibrating his OLED TV, his new LG, and I was with Robert Herron, and we were doing the HDR work, and he had brought some Redmir cables. And by the way, these Redmir cables are essentially powered HDMI cables. They're supposed to allow longer runs and make it, a better cable. But we saw these weird sparklies on the screen, right? Which is an indicator that the cable is too long or not really working very well. And so we swapped them out for passive cables that didn't have this Redmir powered thing on them. Worked just fine.
It worked perfectly.
Perfectly well.
I ended up switching to a uber expensive AudioQuest passive cable because I couldn't get any active cable to work.
And you have a long cable run, right?
Mine is 25 feet. If it was 25 feet, 3 inches, I would need a 30-foot cable. That's how close that 25-foot cable is.
Wow.
But it's very common for front projector because,
your stuff is far away from where the projector
is.
Yeah, exactly. Compter in the chat room is saying the BlueJeans HDMI cables work just fine with 4K and UHD Blu-ray players.
Yes, they advertise theirs, but I think it's up to 20 feet. Mm. Monoprice has a 20-foot passive cable that they're sending me to test, but so far, so good. I've read good responses from it, but it's that 25 is on the borderline and
of being too long,
and 30 is definitely too long. Yeah, you're in trouble there.
Exactly. But another lesson here from Compter is you don't need to spend uber bucks on an HDMI cable. You know, BlueJeans and Monoprice are the two sources I know that provide good value. You know, you don't spend an arm and a leg for an HDMI cable, and they work.
Yes. And, I mean, Monoprice, if it doesn't work, they take it back. They have a good return policy.
Oh, even better. Okay.
So.
Cool. Well, we've got a bunch of calls lined up here, and we're going to get to them very shortly. I wanted to briefly mention our last caller in the last hour was talking about AT&T router, and she was on limited income, could only afford a low bandwidth service, and wanted to stream and had a lot of buffering. And we've gotten a lot of comments in the chat room about that, and one of them was you can turn off the routing function of the AT&T router, which isn't very good anyway, they say. So it was said in the chat room, and get another router to do the routing function and probably would have more buffering. The newer AT&T router might have more buffering as well.
Correct.
And that by that, I mean memory inside the local device that stores the data so that if the stream from the internet gets interrupted, then you can still watch it and it'll still be continuous to a certain degree for a certain amount of time, maybe 30 seconds or a minute or something like that. But that's enough for the stream that got stopped for whatever reason to start back up.
Right. Well, and it's a pipeline issue also.
If the
pipeline coming in is low.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get back to the phone call, so stick with us. It's Scott Wilkinson, the Home Theater Geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, everybody, it's Scott Wilkinson, the Home Theater Geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I've got David Vaughn here with me as well. We're answering questions, and we've got one coming up from number three. Here we go. We got Brandon in Portland, Maine. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Hello. Can you hear me all right?
Sure can.
All right. Yeah, I was wondering, I was looking for a good portable display for my Raspberry Pi. I know it has HDMI and composite inputs and as well as a GPIO. So, I mean, even if I'm putting like C batteries into this display, I don't really care. I just want a good display for my Raspberry Pi.
So you want to be able to take the Raspberry Pi and a display somewhere off the grid or away from a power outlet and just be able to use them together?
Yeah, there aren't any power outlets. Perhaps I could be lugging around a car battery or something. I don't know, but.
Well, I wouldn't recommend that. David, you did a little research on this.
Yeah, I did a little research. I found a monitor on Amazon, but I'm not sure if it's portable or not. It's the official Raspberry Pi Foundation 7-inch touchscreen LCD display. But I don't know. It doesn't say anything here. Well, it says power, only two connections. Power from the GPIO or USB connection to the DSI port. The adapter board handles power, signal conversion, and touch input conversion.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess the one I saw before wasn't even 7 inches, so I mean it barely compared to my Nexus 7. But I was just looking for something that played some movies. But that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it's $77.99, and there's only one left in stock. So hurry!
So hurry up!
Yeah, thanks, guys. All right, thank you.
All right.
Visual masters. Thank you, guys.
Oh, thanks so much. Really appreciate it. I was wondering about using a tablet. I mean, how do you get video into a tablet other than wirelessly? I had never thought of this before.
Neither have I.
Somebody in the chat room might have something to say about it, so we will we'll ask them. But in the meantime, I've got on line two, Greg in Cardiff, California. Greg, how you doing?
I am having a really good day. It's a beautiful sunny day out here on the coast.
Excellent. It's great here in Petaluma as well. Just blue sky and beautiful.
Longtime fan of Leo Laporte and you guys all the way back to the Tech TV days.
Oh, yeah.
I'm in the market for, I want to upgrade my 65-inch television. I've been looking at OLEDs, mm-hmm. and I would like your take on that. They're a lot of money.
And they are, no doubt.
I've heard something about image retention as a possible issue. What are your thoughts?
Image retention is a possible issue. It's not nearly as bad as it is with the plasma used to be, and even plasma got a lot better by the time that category of product died. but it still is an issue. It's even an issue sometimes with LCD TVs. It can be. I just calibrated Leo Laporte's new LG OLED. It's a 65-inch B6, which is the sort of entry-level LG OLED. And it has a feature called, I think it's called screen something or another, basically orbits like plasmas used to do. They, by a pixel or two, they shift the image around. And if you keep a static image on the screen, which calibrators do, but it's not for very long. But if you do for very long, it automatically dims it after 60 seconds or so. Now, that shouldn't be a problem with normal content because normal content moves around a lot unless you pause it and then go, you know, take a shower or take a nap or something and it's sitting there paused. Presumably, the source device will go into a screensaver mode. I don't know if the LG does. It might. We didn't keep it on long enough to determine that. I'll have to go find out. But this auto dimming feature is there for that reason. I think it might become a problem if you watch a lot of like news shows, right?
Where there's a ticker.
With a ticker along the bottom. Or if you always watch one station with a bug in one corner.
Or you watch it in torch mode.
Or you watch it in torch mode, exactly, which we call it jokingly torch mode, but it's really vivid mode. Or game mode also is usually very, very bright. So the first thing I always recommend to all TV buyers is choose the movie or cinema mode, which is easy to find in the picture menu. It's called picture mode or mode, something like that. And so it's called movie mode or cinema mode. That will bring down the overall brightness and make that image retention less of a problem.
And question about the LG, since they seem to be the only brand out there right now.
They are.
I'm looking around Christmas season or so. Are there new models? Is there a cycle coming up?
Well, that's a great question. Normally the new TVs are introduced at CES in January. And so by Christmas time, the prices might be starting to fall a bit. Certainly Black Friday, which is the Friday after Thanksgiving, is a good time because they often run sales there. But the LG 2016 lineup, which includes the B6 at the bottom, the E6 in the middle and the G6, which is the top of the line. Those are all flat. They also have a C6, which is curved. Used to be a big thing, and it still is with Samsung TVs, but LG, fortunately, thank you LG, has gotten away from the curved thing and gone back to flat screens, which I really, really appreciate.
I much
prefer that.
Me too.
Yeah, exactly. So, and they are the only ones making OLEDs in the United States. Well, they're only ones making OLED panels and selling them as TVs in the United States. There are some other brands that LG is selling panels to in Europe and elsewhere in the world. Grundig, Philips, I forget the other ones, but they don't come into the U.S. So since you're in California, LG is the only game in town, and they're wonderful. They're not perfect. As we discovered, if you watch my Home Theater Geeks episode 323, which just got posted yesterday, I think, or the day before, you'll see that we went through the entire calibration procedure, and it's a beautiful TV. I would buy one. If I were to buy a TV right now, I would buy an OLED, even though it's more expensive, and you're right about that, a lot more expensive, but they offer so many advantages over LCDs, including much deeper blacks. They're not as bright, but if you watch in a dark room, relatively dark room like I do, it's not a problem at all. Image retention can be a problem if under the conditions we discussed earlier. But overall, it's just such a beautiful looking image. And LG has implemented both HDR10 and Dolby Vision, the two primary forms of high dynamic range that we were talking about earlier on the show.
Yeah, that's
That was my next question about HDR.
Yeah. HDR10 is the predominant one. It's an open standard, so it doesn't cost manufacturers to do it. And we're going to continue talking about that right after the break. This is Scott Wilkinson, the Home Theater Geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm here with David Vaughn of Sound and Vision, and we are moving and grooving and answering questions from people about audio and video. I will remind you that today's show, unlike Leo's show, when he's here, he'll talk about anything with a chip in it, but we're talking about audio and video specifically, and more specifically than that, enjoying audio and video as a consumer. So TVs, movies, stereo systems, surround systems, speakers, Blu-ray, all that kind of stuff. We're absolutely happy to talk about. And let's see. I think I'm going to go to line six here. Jocelyn in Orange County. Hey, Jocelyn, how you doing?
Great. Thanks so much for taking my call, Scott and David.
My pleasure. How can we help you?
I have a Samsung Blu-ray player that we actually received as a bundle in 2011 with the TV we purchased.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the issues that has come up recently is I purchased an X-Files DVD, the new Blu-ray for the last season. And I put it in, it plays the promotional studio image and music, and then it goes dead.
Mm.
So I returned the Blu-ray,
mm-hmm.
And then got a replacement, and it does the same thing. So I even asked my neighbor to, see if it would play on his Blu-ray player, and he had, I think it was an Xbox Blu-ray player, and he said it played just fine.
Okay, well.
So I'm trying to figure out, is it a new production thing? Is it a calibration thing?
It could be one of two things. First thing I would do with your Samsung is the firmware up to date.
I think I did try to update it. I would have to double check. I know we had to do that with the TV.
Yeah, that's
that was my first suggestion.
Yeah,
because
the firmware, as Leo loves to point out, Hollywood is so afraid of us stealing their movies and TV shows that they make it hard for regular consumers to actually watch their TVs and movies. And they could have changed the copy protection that they use when they encode the disc, and you need the key to unlock it on your end. So the trailers and such aren't locked, but the content of the show is.
Yeah.
So that would be my first step is go into, I believe on Samsung players, it's under settings and
firmware update.
Firmware update.
Something
look
like
for
that.
Firmware update, or it'll go out and look. That is probably your issue.
Yeah. Now, you are able to play other Blu-ray discs in that player, and they work fine, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So that would be my guess as well, that it's probably the firmware. And every once in a while when any Blu-ray player boots up or you put a disc in, it says, this may take a little while to boot up. Make sure your firmware is up to date. So that would be my first recommendation. You said you had another idea?
Well, it is an X-Files disc. It could be an alien. Yeah, when it played in your neighbor's machine, that most likely is yours. I mean, there's a slight chance that the laser optical pickup is going out on the player, but that is so rare.
So rare, and it would affect other discs
correct.
As well.
So correct.
We think it's a firmware update problem. If you do that, I bet you'll be fine.
Okay, and so with the age of the player, do you think it's worth even trying to do the firmware update?
Oh, sure. It's free.
Firmware update's free. If that doesn't work, then you can buy a Blu-ray player for $50.
Yeah.
I mean, there's commodity items big time. And the Blu-ray player you'll get today will have a bevy of streaming options if you need them.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
Thank you so much for answering my question.
You bet. Good luck.
All right.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right, so let's see. I'm going to go to Joey in San Diego here. Joey, you're on with Scott Wilkinson and David Vaughn. How you doing?
Hey, great, Scott. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sure can.
Okay, Scott, thank you. Hey, Scott, I got a real easy question. What would you recommend for a stereo system for your house for just listening to music, a two-channel, you know? The reason I'm asking is you can talk to 10 audio files and you'll get 10 different opinions.
No, you'll actually get 11 different opinions.
That's correct, Scott. Scott, I've gone to CES a few times over the years, too, and I've seen the impressiveness. And I know it matters. You know, I mean, you just can't say, you know, I've listened to music for over 40 years, and but I've never done it right. You know, I've always, you know, just stereos in my ear or, you know.
Oh, you mean like little earbuds, that kind of thing?
And it's horrible, you know, because I've gone to CES, I've gone to some libraries, too, in my area, and I've seen it done right, and it's amazing. So,
yeah,
you know, I mean, I know it's a basic question, and another question, too, is it possible for you to split your shows up? Because you do a lot of video and, you know, audio kind of gets left behind, and you know, I'm more the audio person. So,
well, I'd have to say that my show on the Twit Network called Home Theater Geeks, we spend a fair amount of time on audio.
You do, but I just, you know.
Yeah, you just want more, okay.
Audio, man, it's like, it's so life-changing, you know?
And it sure can be, no doubt about it.
It's just so amazing, you know? It just does something to your body and stuff like Scott, let me ask you this, too. You've been around forever. You know what it is. Between the tube amps and the transistors, is there the warmth of that tube? But, you know, tubes are going out. You can't buy them anymore.
Yeah.
It's all gone expensive. Would you say, though, with your experience, that you can get an amp transistor system that can match what a tube is?
Match is a good question. Well, you've asked a bunch of questions here, and I'm going to take them as quick as I can. First of all, what's your budget for this system that you want to buy?
Well, I don't want to spend $1 million.
Well, you know you can. You know that, right?
Exactly, yes.
Okay, well, for a budget system, I've got to say, we were just talking off air about this company called ELAC, E-L-A-C. And they recently hired a speaker designer by the name of Andrew Jones, who I have immense respect for.
You guys talk about him all the time.
Yeah, he's just wonderful. And he builds really great speakers that punch far above their price class. Now, ELAC recently also introduced a little two-channel integrated amp, right? So for the integrated amp and a pair of bookshelf speakers, I think you're probably in the $1,000 range, roughly.
Sure.
And man, that just sounds awesome. I've heard it a number of times, and it's just great. So that would be my first recommendation.
Now, with the ELAC, do they recommend using a sub with their bookshelf as
now,
well?
That's another really good question. You can.
Yeah, they're Pioneer too.
The Pioneer bookshelves are also very good. They don't have Andrew Jones on their payroll anymore. So the ones going forward, hopefully they'll take his designs and base their new stuff off of that. But, you know, those are also very good. I don't think they – this ELAC system is so compact and very appealing. Just it's easy and
– sounds like what I need.
Yeah. Oh, it's wonderful. And, David, you bring up a great point about adding a subwoofer to a two-channel system. Audiophiles will generally eschew that option.
Yeah, but with bookshelf speakers, you're cutting
these bookshelf out. Speakers are
do they go low?
Remarkable. I mean, they don't go into real subwoofer territory, but they are just amazing.
What about Goldnear speakers?
That's another option. Yeah, well, those are quite a bit more expensive.
True. Well, he told us he didn't want to spend $1 million, but we're under $1 million.
Okay, yeah, well, certainly with Goldnear. Goldnear is another company that makes some wonderful speakers. They're more expensive. They're in the, I think, few thousand dollars a pair. Couple thousand anyway, depending on the model. Hang on there. We're coming up to a break. Hold that thought, and we'll be right back. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Man, the music today is really groovy. Yeah, so groovy. It's Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm with David Vaughn of Sound and Vision magazine and soundandvision.com, and we are talking with Joey in San Diego about two-channel audio, and we got interrupted there. Joey, you with us?
Yes, sir, I am.
Excellent. We were going to talk a little bit about adding a subwoofer to a two-channel system, and a lot of audiophiles don't really like that. They'd rather have full-range speakers, and the ELACs in particular go down pretty low. I'm very impressed with them. I think it's down to something like 40 hertz or something, which is, you know, only not very far above the theoretical limit of human hearing. But if you want to get that extra bass, you know, you can add a subwoofer to things, and ELAC makes a number of really good value-oriented subwoofers, some of which even have an app that let you tune them to your room in a very effective way. Really very nice. So, you know, that would be another option to do. Somebody in the chat room was saying that the ELAC speakers and an integrated amp from a company called Peachtree, which I'm not familiar with their products per se. I know that they have a very good reputation, so that would be another option. But the question I really wanted to address with you was your second major question, which was solid state versus tubes. Now this is the religious debate of audiophilia. You know, it's partly just a matter of feel, and you mentioned that music really engages you and allows you to experience some deep stuff, right? And
I got to make a crazy comment here.
All right,
I don't know why people do drugs, because you can get it all out of me.
There you go. I'm totally digging that, man. totally behind you on that.
You know what? It, music is not as good as sex, but dude, if you need a substitute, it'll do.
Yeah,
music all my life, man. It's dominated my life, man.
Good for you. Good for you. Well, I'm with you all the way. With you all the way. Okay, so tubes versus.
One more comment.
All right, just a second.
One more comment.
All right.
You know, I really wish you could sit in for Leo more. You know, I mean, you do some. You know, I'm not saying that you're better than him or he's better than me.
No. I would never say that.
You bring something to this table that's really needed.
Well, you know, thank you.
You know, I mean, I know you sit in for him when he's on vacation, but man, I wish you could do it maybe once a month.
Well, just keep listening to his show. Keep listening to his show. I'm always on just after the 11:30 news.
Yeah. I like to get you for that full 3 hours.
Thank you so much for your kind comments. I really appreciate that. But to get back to your question about tubes versus solid state, as I said, it's somewhat of a religious question. And we normally don't deal with religious questions on this show. But I'll say this. Tubes give you a certain kind of sound. And you mentioned it earlier, a warmth. That comes actually from distortion. It's not an accurate representation of what's on the disc or coming from the source device. It's actually what's called even order harmonic distortion. And that gives you that warmth. And it does foster an emotional response you know? Whereas solid state, you referred to transistors, and we're way beyond transistors now. It's, you know, chips, right?
Yes.
With millions of transistors on these little chips tend to be more accurate representation, but some audiophiles call it cold or clinical, and so that's why they prefer the tubes. You also mentioned, and rightly so, tubes are becoming very, very hard to find.
I think Macintosh still makes them, don't they?
Yeah, there are companies that make tube products, but there aren't very many people that make tubes, the tubes themselves. And if the tube fails, you're in some trouble. David, you had a story about that.
There used to be an audio shop up in Santa Rosa, California. They had tube amps and in this huge room. But the closer you got to the tube amp, the warmer it was.
It's like a heater.
They're space heaters.
Yeah. Exactly. And they're also power hogs.
Yes.
And they don't put out nearly as much power, right? So you need pretty efficient speakers in order to take best advantage of them. I mean, I've heard of tube amps that put out like, 3 or 5 watts as opposed to solid state amps, which can put out hundreds easily. Now, you don't normally use 100 watts or 200 watts. You're normally using only the first watt or two,
right,
for normal listening. I mean, if you used 100 watts, you know, you would need, you know, earplugs and you'd be blasted out of the room. So it's not that big a deal that some people make it out to be. It's really more the sound quality and the expense. Tube equipment is generally more expensive.
So, right. Hey, Scott, have you seen any high fidelity music? Do you think Apple will ever get into that?
Boy,
I know there's HD tracks out there, but mainly.
Well, there's the difference between downloading and streaming, right? Downloading, you can download high resolution audio tracks, no problem. HD tracks, iTracks, iTrax from AIX sure. Records has great, great high resolution tracks. 2L from Norway, 2L. I think it's 2L.com, also has some great high-resolution tracks. But streaming is another question. What's that?
I'm sorry. I like to make a recommendation to people, too.
Okay.
I'm on a service called Slacker. It's like a competitor to Pandora. It's like $4 a month. But, Scott, you get them with a good, like, maybe your Apple, your Bose Quiet or either $500 set of speakers on Wi-Fi, and they are amazing.
Really? Tell me the name of it again.
Slacker.
Slacker. Oh, okay.
And then there's Tidal.
Set of headphones, though. You can't have cheap headphones, but
yeah,
With that Wi-Fi, it'll blow you away. They really do, because there's a setting you'll go into to tell it to stream it higher on Wi-Fi.
Hmm.
You do that, it does sound better.
Wow. Well, there's also Tidal, T-I-D-A-L, which
they charge too much. They want $10 a month.
Yeah. All right.
Same thing for $4 a month out of Slack.
Okay.
For a guy with just under $1 million budget, he's pretty cheap.
Yeah. Hey, thank you guys for taking my call.
Hey, thanks so much, man. That was great. Thanks a lot. yeah, man. Well, so there are some streaming options that can get you really high quality if you have the bandwidth. We were talking about someone in the other hour that didn't have much bandwidth, so that might not be...
Well, what gets me is we have the argument between tube and solid state, mm-hmm. and now in solid state we have Class A, Class AB, and Class D, all these different arguments going mm-hmm. on, and mm-hmm. I've heard some great Class D amplifiers. I use Class D for my Atmos speakers.
Yeah, exactly.
A Parasound Zone Master 1250 sounds great. It's, you know, and I have a Parasound A51, which is Class AB.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be hard-pressed to tell the difference between the two.
Yeah. Class D, which is
digital amp.
Sometimes called a digital amp, and that may be a bit of a misnomer, but that's what they call it anyway. And it's much more efficient, but it hasn't really become a sort of mainstream full-range amplifier, full-frequency range, until pretty recently. They've used them in subwoofers for a while, but that's band limited. You only have to reproduce the low frequencies. To reproduce the entire range from 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz has only more recently been available and works really well. This new ELAC integrated amp uses Class D. A lot of companies now
are
using Class D.
Pioneer, I think, is using it in their AVRs now, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, we might have time for another question here. I'm going to – TV recommendations are always among my favorites, so I'm going to hit that one and say hi to Charles in Ontario. Hey, Charles, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. You know, funny story that you're talking about audio equipment. I used to work with Jonas Miller, if you remember the guy out in Santa Monica.
I don't think I remember that name.
Miller.
He's the one that introduced M&K speakers.
M&K.
M&K.
Okay,
oh,
I was just going to say, I have M&K.
Chrysler. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I have M&K speakers.
Yeah. I started back when I was like 16, back in 75. Remember, I don't know if you remember Cal Stereo, Federated.
Oh, I do remember Federated, sure.
Federated. But my you know, you're talking about amplifiers. I have a couple of Macintosh amps, like the MC250 tubes, and they're very hard to get. Very hard.
See? Exactly so.
And if you can get them, you know, either out of Japan or, you know, there's still some of the equipment out there. But if you're really into high-end, then you need to pay close attention to what you're getting. And like you said, I don't know if you remember the Bedini amplifiers.
I don't. Bedini?
Bedini. Look them up.
Okay.
Bedini was a, they're made in France. And what happened, they're low powered.
Hang on. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know, I think Leo has something important to tell all of us. Let's check it out.
Oh, man. We're going to take a break on the Tech Guy Show and come back with more in just a minute. But first, I got to remind you about our fabulous sponsor, Audible.com. Before I left for vacation, you know what I did. I downloaded audiobooks. So did Lisa. It was funny. Last night, she was going through Audible and looking for books. She wants 4 books. I brought 20. Not that I'll read all 20, but I just love having a choice. And the nice thing about Audible, it's on my iPhone. It's on my Android phone. If I listen on one, it syncs up on the other. I can listen to it on my Amazon Echo, which I do all the time. See, Audible is a way to read when you can't hold a book. It's the best readers, wonderful, wonderful voices and acting. And I mean, they just bring the book to life. And you can listen to it anytime. And so, as I said, I have it everywhere. On computer, you can listen on your Chromebook even, because you can play it back through the web interface. Of course, every platform. And I love it that this syncs up. So, for instance, I get home and I'm going to make dinner. So I just say, Echo, listen to my book. That's literally all I have to do. And it knows where I left off out in the car on the way home and picks up right there. Actually, it goes back like 10 seconds just so I know where I am. Oops, my Echo heard that. Never mind. I'm not talking to you right now. But it's awesome. I like to read before I travel. I like to read about the places and times. One of our listeners who's been really fantastic, he's a professor, teaches kind of Eastern European history, I think. He was in Kazakhstan, recommended that I read a book by Bulgakov, who's a famous Russian novelist banned during the Soviet era, but came back after the Soviet era, and his Master and the Margarita is considered not only a masterpiece, and it is, I have to say, even in translation. And it's a good translation. And the reader is so good. And our correspondent, I'm sorry, I can't remember your name. You know who you are. Said, if you want to understand the Russian psyche, the Russian, you know, of course you read, you know, Tolstoy and Dostoevsky, and I've got all of that on Audible too. But something more modern like Solzhenitsyn or Bulgakov really gives you the sense of the Russian psyche. So I'm reading that, and I'm loving that. Of course, I read a lot of history on Audible. I like to alternate fiction with nonfiction. A lot of science fiction, too. Audible's great for that. So here's the deal. We're going to get you a free book so you can try it out. Because I know maybe you're, like, skeptical. I know I was in the year 1998 when I considered audiobooks. I had a lot of commuting, 2 hours or more a day, and I was really tired of listening to radio. And in 1998, you know, I was going down to the screensavers, down to Tech TV. There weren't a lot of choices. You didn't have iPods and stuff. So I got a Diamond Rio, and I started listening to Audible books. And it was awesome. Changed my life. More than 400 some books now. And your library is always a part of you. So I have all the books I've ever listened to. And that's what I actually did for our trip is I went through the list of all of them, and I downloaded, you know, some classics, Dune, Ender's Game. So get your first book free. See if you like it. I think you will. There's lots of time when you can't, you could read because you're on the treadmill at the gym or the bike, or you're walking the dog or washing the dishes or commuting to work, when you wouldn't mind a little entertainment, take your mind off your labors, and having an audiobook. Well, for me, it's a lifesaver. Give it a try. You'll find out if it is for you. We've got a free book for you. Just because you're listening, all you got to do is go to audible.com/tech guy, audible.com/tech guy, and you'll be signing up for the gold account. That's a book a month, but your first month is free. So, you know, you've got a book to listen to, and the Daily Digest of the New York Times, of the Wall Street Journal. And then if you get, you know, if you get to the end of that month and you say, that's not for me, cancel. You'll have paid nothing. Keep the book. It's yours to keep. I don't think you will. It's such a transformation. Certainly was for me. Audible.com/tech guy. Give it a try, won't you? Now back to the Tech Guy Show. You should listen to that, too, whenever you're not doing an Audible book.
Hey, everybody. Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy, who's on vacation. He'll be back next week, so I hope you get your questions ready for him about all things digital, everything with a chip in it he'll talk about. For today, however, we are talking about audio and video, and I'm here with David Vaughn, who is a Blu-ray and product reviewer for Sound and Vision Magazine and soundandvision.com. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Scott. Can't believe it's the last hour already.
Can you believe that? Just amazing. For those of you who might not recognize me, I am the editor of avsforum.com, the world's largest online community of AV enthusiasts. We have over 1 million members and plenty of opinions there. So any questions you don't get answered on the show today, you can always post questions there and get a plethora of opinions.
Yes. AVS is another one of my many addictions that,
indeed.
I have every day.
Yeah, good for you. Excellent. Glad to hear it. Many people do log on every single day. To post a question, you need to join, but it's free. It's no big deal. You know, it doesn't cost you anything. Just have to, you know, sign up and make some sort of screen name for yourself. And then you can post questions and answer questions and go back and forth. There are newbies on the site as well as very experienced people. So full range. And for the most part, I mean, it's a moderated forum. Things sometimes get a little heated, you know.
So, depends on if you're in the audiophile section or not.
Yeah. More. We were talking about audiophilia earlier. But generally speaking, people are pretty well behaved. And if they're not, the moderators are there to get them off get them out of there. So come on in. The water is fine. Now, you know what? We were talking with Charles, and I think I've got him back here. Charles, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So we were talking about audio stuff, but that wasn't really your question, was it?
No, you just remind me. I think some of your other fellow there might be interested in some of the old Nakamichi Dragon.
Oh yeah. Nakamichi was a venerated brand back in the 80s and 90s.
Oh yeah, huge.
Huge.
No more.
Yeah. Well, they're still around, I think.
Yeah, but they're not.
Not a big
influence.
Yeah,
not a big name.
Cheap.
Yeah. So anyway, you had a question about TVs, so let's get to that.
Yes, here's my question. The Samsung 7 Series UN55 KU7000 4K UHD with UHDR, I think it's the ultra-high definition.
Well, yes, it's an ultra-high definition set. It's got 4K resolution. But if you say it's the JU, then it's not really HDR, high dynamic range, compatible. That is the JS series. So are you sure it's JU?
It's KU.
Okay.
KU? K as in Karen?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry, my mistake. That's the 2016 model. If it were a J, it'd be the 2015 model. My impression has always been that to get high dynamic range in a Samsung, you needed the KS series. Maybe some, but if it says it
on the box or in the literature or whatever that it's HDR, then I might be wrong about that.
High dynamic range technology.
Okay. Well, it, you know.
That sounds like marketing speak to me.
It does. And let me tell you something. There's a difference between HDR compatible and HDR capable. Okay. So it might be able to accept an HDR signal, but it would display it in standard dynamic range. It would compress the dynamic range into standard dynamic range. If it were HDR capable, it would actually display an HDR signal with the higher dynamic range. So that marketing speak there is making me feel a little nervous.
Okay, here's my other question. Monster Cable, AudioQuest, HDMI cables. I mean, I've used the best, and I've gotten Terra Labs, which I know you're aware of some of those cables.
Sure.
The 4K CD players, now they're coming out. I think Samsung's got one for around $400.
Yep.
Would you recommend something of that capability with a TV combination?
How far are you running the cable?
Oh, it's about 3 feet.
Then if I would save the money and buy myself the best mono price cable money can buy. They make their 18 gigabits per second cables. You can get a 6-footer for under $10.
Yeah. I'm in complete agreement.
Tell me that, because I've spent so much money on cable that you don't have audio and Terra Labs.
It's ones and zeros, so
you're not alone, man. You're not alone. So many people buy those really expensive cables, and for a short length like that, it's really not necessary. Monoprice or BlueJeans, even Amazon Basics.
Yes.
Are fine. Absolutely fine. You do not need to spend a bunch of money on HDMI cables.
What would you recommend for the best 4K TV for under $1,500?
I'd have to say the Vizio. The Vizio P-Series. The 65-inch is $2,000. The 65-inch, and then there's a 55-inch for $1,500 and the 50-inch for $1,000. Now, the 55-inch has a different type of panel than the other two. It's got what's called an IPS panel, in-plane switching. And what that means is the blacks aren't quite as deep, but you have a wider viewing angle. So if you typically have a lot of people viewing off to the sides of the TV, that's a good choice. Otherwise, I recommend the 50 or the 60. I guess it's a 60, not a 65. 60-inch for $2,000. You could also go with the M series, which is a step down. Both of those series have HDR capability. In fact, not only HDR10, which the Samsungs do as well, but Dolby Vision, which you get from Vudu streaming. So if you're subscribed to Vudu and you get HDR streams from there, you'll get Dolby Vision, and you'll be able to watch it on the Vizio TVs. But I think the Vizio M series and P series are the best value for 4K HDR capable TVs.
Right. Here's my other question. Now that you brought up a good question there, my system has DTS, which it's not the old DTS, and there's a few TVs that have DTS premium sound. Is that capable, or is that telling me that it has to have like an onboard decoder of the TV to?
Well, you're talking about two different things here. There you're talking about audio, and I assume you have an external audio system, you know, like an AV receiver and some speakers, something like that.
Yes, but the TV DTS capable.
Right, but it's irrelevant because the DTS audio is going to be dealt with by your sound system, by your AV receiver.
Gotcha.
It doesn't matter unless you're using the TV's internal speakers, which I never recommend.
That splits it into, I guess. Yeah, you're right. It splits it into 5.1 sound.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, but it's irrelevant. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool. Thank you.
Thanks so much for the call. Really appreciate it.
And Scott, before we go to another call, I was just looking on Vizio's site. They actually have a 75-inch P-Series,
yes.
A 65-inch P-Series, a 55, and a 50.
Okay, I was right the first time. It's a 65.
So, yeah, so the 50 is $999, the 55 is $1,299, 65 is $1,999, and go big. $37.99 for 75 inches.
Oh, man. So $3,800 bucks for a 75-inch TV. You know, people do this. They assume that, oh, you know, a 65 is going to be way too big. But as you mentioned earlier, they sit like 10 feet away.
Yeah.
You know, 65 inches is not too big, especially at 4K.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you could sit 5 feet away.
My wife doesn't like this, but in our spare bedroom, I want to put like a 75 or 80 inch TV.
Yeah, man. I'm digging that. Hey, it's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy, back after this. Oh, yeah. Play that funky music.
The music is on fire today.
On fire today. Hey, it's Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm joined by David Vaughn of Sound and Vision Magazine and soundandvision.com. David?
Yes.
So nice to have you here.
Yes, time's flying by.
Time's really flying by. So we're going to take another call here. Here's a good one. Number six, JC in Corinth, Mississippi. JC, how you doing, man?
I'm all right, Scott. How you doing?
Great, thanks.
I actually have two questions. The first one is, I got a lot of my clients that have a lot more money than I do, and they're buying HDR TVs and sound systems for them. They go to Best Buy, buy the stuff, throw it in their house, and I heard you talking before about calibrating this stuff. One of the things I'd like to offer to my clients is to be able to calibrate this, and I have no idea where to get the training or the tools from. I was going to see if you can help me out with that.
Sure, absolutely. There are two main places to get training. One is the Imaging Science Foundation, or ISF, imagingscience.org, I believe, is the website. Let me double-check that. But they offer training classes. Imaging. Let's see. David, can you get that?
Nope, that one didn't.
Imaging Science.
Google.
Google. Imaging Science Foundation is, imagingscience.com. Okay. So they offer training. And very comprehensive, very good training. They, in fact, for a long time had the contract to train Best Buy installers. I don't know if they still do, but they did for a long time. So that'd be one thing to go. The other one is from THX, who is well known for certifying theaters and so on and so forth. THX certified products. You know, that weird sound thing at the beginning of movies sometimes. They offer training courses as well. And I've taken that one. I've actually taken both of them. And they're both very good. So that's at thx.com/upcoming training. If you just go to thx.com, you'll be able to find it, I'm sure.
Yeah. You could also go to SpectraCal's website.
SpectraCal makes the software that most of us use for calibration.
And they have on there calman.spectracal.com/calibration-training.
Oh, very good.
They have
pointers there.
They have the 5th through the 7th in Munich, Germany, and November 2nd through the 4th in New York City with Joel Silver heading the ISF certification class.
Great.
So I use Calman.
Yeah, exactly. There's another option, too, which is a video series actually produced by a guy named Michael Chen, who's in Canada. And if you go to his website, which is TLVEXP.ca, because he's in Canada. So it's I think it stands for the Laser Video Experience. TLVEXP.ca. He has a series of videos that it's not as good as hands-on training, but it's also a lot less expensive. And I think it might be a very good place to start.
New York's pretty expensive.
Yeah. I think that's probably the best way to start. I think it costs $100 or $200, something along those lines. Certainly a lot less than the thousands it costs for the hands-on training, plus the travel to wherever the training is. And so on and so forth. So I think that's a really good place to start. And Michael Chen's a great guy. I've had him on my podcast, and he knows what he's doing. So I'd say that's probably the place to start.
Grabbing the tools, like you said before, that you have to have special remotes and devices to read the colors and things like that?
Yeah, you don't need special remotes necessarily. What you do need is the Calman software from SpectraCal. There are other options as well, but most of us all use Calman from SpectraCal. And then you need a meter, some sort of device that basically senses light from the TV and measures it. Now, there are two types of meters. One is called a colorimeter, which is less expensive, but it's also more limited. And it needs to undergo a process called profiling for different kinds of TVs. The other kind is called a spectroradiometer, more expensive and slower at reading things. But you do need something like that. Now, you can get a colorimeter as low as, I think, a few hundred bucks. But I'd plan on spending at least $1,000 to get something pretty good. And you can spend well into the five figures to get something really professional. So if you're going to do this as a professional, as a profession, as part of your professional offering, as it sounds like you're going to do, then I would say, you know, you want to make a little investment in your business. And believe me, you'll get work, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that I'm going to add as this isn't going to be our primary bread and butter. It's going to be something that's going to be added to folks who are already doing stuff with us. So I'll probably spend between $5,000 and $10,000. I don't want to really go over $10,000.
Oh, man. Yeah. If you've got $10,000 to spend on to invest in this in your business, then I would absolutely, you could get some really nice equipment for that. But definitely go on TLVEXP.ca, Michael Chen's website. He probably has some recommendations as well. Also, the SpectraCal.com website has a bunch of meters for sale there, and you'll get a good education about that there.
Awesome. The other question I had for you, and I'm assuming this equipment would also, are there any such thing as high dynamic range projectors?
Yes, there are.
Assuming this equipment would work on that as well.
Sure, exactly right.
You have to make sure your meter that you use is compatible with high dynamic range.
Yes, and not strictly what's called a contact meter.
Right.
Right, so there are some less expensive meters that you have to actually put up against a TV screen. And you obviously can't do that with a projector. It has to be out in the room sensing the light coming into it. So you have to make sure you don't get a contact meter. You should be able to do it. It shouldn't be a problem. Now, the HDR projectors don't go nearly as bright as TVs.
Right.
So there's no problem there. Meters, you know, can easily read that brightness. There are HDR projectors. They're lagging behind TVs. We saw some from Sony for the last couple of years, JVC for the last year. Now, more of them are coming online.
Epson has some.
Epson has one now. Wolf Cinema, Vivitech, Digital Projection. So there are a number of them now coming out.
Okay. The last question I have for you is, I just converted my attic into a office / getaway / whatever you want to call it.
The man attic.
The man attic. It gets really, really dark at night.
Yeah.
But it does have two windows in it that shine on exactly where I want to do this. And what I want to do is I want to put in a projector and a screen.
Yep.
Now, the thing is, the max distance that I can get from where I want to put the screen is about 6 feet.
Ooh, that's close.
The screen itself could be 4 foot tall by 6 foot wide. That would be my max to be able to do this in the area that I want to do it in.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I also want it to be able to do Chromecast and have the ability to connect my computer system in for if I want to throw something from my computer up onto the wall.
That's all possible. So and unfortunately, I hang on a second. We'll get right back to it. It's Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I'm talking with JC in Corinth, Mississippi. And you had a quick question. Let's spend another couple minutes on a projector in your man attic.
Yes, sir.
Anyway, you don't need anything fancy, it sounds like. So I'm going to recommend, if you can push the budget a little bit, Epson's got a number of new home cinema projectors in the 3 series. 3100 is the 3100 is $1,300, so it's a little bit more.
Okay.
But it's a 1080p, and it should fill the bill really nicely. There's also the 3700 for $1,500 and the 3900 for $2,000. So they give you some measure of choice there, and they're really, really good. The other brands that I would look at are BenQ, B-E-N-Q, and Optima, all of which make quite good, inexpensive 1080p projectors. We're not talking 4K here. We're not talking HDR, but we're talking 1080p home theater type projectors. So that's what I'm going to recommend.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Scott.
My pleasure. Thanks so much. Bye-bye. Okay, now I want to go to Archie in Hawthorne, California. Archie, welcome to the show.
Well, I'm glad to talk to you guys again rather than just watch you on the stream, which is doing very well today. And thank you for taking over for Leo.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
My question has to do with hearing and age and records that are 78 down to 16 that I'd like to put on because I don't have too much of a hearing. I don't have a hearing aid that can work. I'm a radio amateur, so I'm used to headphones.
Mm-hmm.
And I find those to be very uncomfortable trying to listen to the pops and clicks and the 78 records and stuff like that.
Oh, so you're actually listening to 78 records.
Oh, yeah. I've got some 78s. I've got some 16 records, 16 RPM records. And
wow.
Stuff like code testing and all the rest. That
Man, that's reaching back into history a ways there. You must have an older turntable. I don't think they make them anymore.
I have a turntable that runs from 16 up to 78.
Okay.
And it's about 60 years old.
Wow. There you go. That's amazing. And you listen on headphones, you say?
Technic. T-E-K-N-I-C-S. I think that's when it was.
That's the turntable or the headphones?
Turntable.
Turntable. Okay, well, Technics is a brand from Panasonic, and it's been around a really long time, so I'm not all that surprised. Yeah. Do you listen on speakers or headphones? You said you didn't like headphones because you could hear too much of the clicks and pops.
Yeah, that's what I do. And I've also got the record player that I can feed into a thing to make the DVDs work pretty good. And the DVDs are too darn clean. And I've also got a tube amplifier
mm-hmm.
that I use with the darn things. And I can hear pretty good on those darn things. But my hearing range is way down. Like, my left ear is about 6K and my right ear is about 9K.
You mean to say that's the upper limit of your hearing in those two ears?
The limit is about 9K, maybe 7.5 to 9K.
Yeah, you're not hearing all the high frequencies, unfortunately.
I know they're there because I've heard them before. In fact, I used to dance to the 16s and the 78s for years and years and years. Used to have a real good time.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm 8 years old. I can do a little dance, and I can play. I can do amateur radio, but hearing my records and stuff like that, I'd just like to hear your thoughts on a guy with old ears.
Well, you're talking about age-related hearing loss, which is a almost universal problem.
What was that? No.
I couldn't resist. All right. It is a universal problem. As we age, we lose our hearing, particularly at the top end. And there isn't much you can do about it. I mean, you can get hearing aids. You can EQ so that the higher frequencies have greater amplitude. But if your hearing simply isn't there, it's just not there, and there's not a lot you can do about it. I know.
You said something about an EQ.
Yeah, it's called equalization. Right. So with an equalizer, which there may be one in your AV receiver, or you can buy an external one, you can tell it to boost certain frequency ranges. So if you're not hearing much above 9K, 9 kilohertz, 9,000 cycles per second, you can set the EQ to say, boost the frequencies above 9 kilohertz, make them louder. so that when you listen to them, you'll be able to hear them better. But depending on how much your own hearing system has attenuated those frequencies, there may not be that much of a benefit. I mean, if you're down 60, 70, 80 decibels in those frequencies, then EQ isn't going to help you that much. I'm sorry to say. I mean, you could get hearing aids that do have greater help, but good hearing aids are in the thousands of dollars. Yeah, you know. You've probably gone shopping for them, and man, oh man, are they expensive. They're very programmable, and they do this equalization thing that I was talking about, where they'll boost certain frequencies that your hearing is deficient in. But man, it might not be very effective, depending on how profound the hearing loss is in those higher frequencies.
Roger that.
Sorry. Okay, well, sorry, I can't help you anymore.
I'll go look a little bit more, and me and me audiologist will get together and see what we can do about getting my ears back to at least a little bit of normal where I can enjoy the brilliance of some of that stuff that I know exists that I'm not able to hear anymore.
Not hearing anymore. Well, your audiologist, definitely go with the audiologist. Have you had a hearing test done to see what your hearing profile is?
Yeah, I did. I had a hearing test, and my left ear, I think, was the maximum I could hear out of that was about 4.5K.
And wow.
It was about 7, 8 and a quarter K.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it depends on how far down it is above that, but it could. There might not be much you can do.
Yeah. Well, you guys keep up the fine business work that you're doing in substituting for Leo. And
thank you.
Thank you for your help.
All right. Thanks so much. Take care. All right. Let's go to Ron in Moore Park. We've got Ron in Moore Park. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I'm happy you took my call because my wife called a while ago, and I said, look, I can't talk to you. I'm listening to the radio.
Well, thank you so much.
And I'm almost home, so I'm going to slow down.
Okay.
So I just got a nice new television, and I'm looking for a wireless soundbar, a really good soundbar with wireless rear speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard that maybe Bose is coming out this month with something like that also. I'd just like to get your thoughts.
Yeah, sure. I have to say I'm not a big fan of Bose, generally speaking, except their noise-canceling headphones. What I recommend is Samsung just came out with a new soundbar with wireless rear speakers with Atmos in them. So they also have up-firing drivers that bounce off the ceiling and give you that overhead sound. Very nice. Vizio is also another company I would look at. Those two brands both make wireless rear speaker soundbars. So that's what I'd look at. Thanks so much for the call. Hang on a second.
Okay.
It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back after this. Ron, you still there?
Yeah.
I'm not going to be able to take you up back on the air, but let me try and help you here with another minute or two.
Yeah, I do have the Vizio with the wireless.
Oh, you don't like it?
It's okay. I just like more fidelity, especially when I'm like watching a band on television where I can really hear the music.
Mm. Well, you know, Vizio is what it is. It's generally well-regarded, not very expensive. The Samsung is more expensive. What kind of budget do you have?
Well, I'm $1,000, maybe more.
Yeah, I think the Samsung then is going to be a great choice because they've got a new audio lab that they developed this in, and I've had a tour of it. And it's really amazing. They're doing some amazing stuff there. Let me look that up real quick. Samsung Atmos soundbar. Yes. It's the
HW-K950.
HW-K950. Right. Great. And on Amazon, it is $1,250.
Sold.
They also make an 850. So the 950 is as Atmos, and it's what's called 5.1.4, which means you have five speakers around you in a surround such situation, one subwoofer, and four up-firing speakers that bring the sound back down from the ceiling, as long as you have a good reflective ceiling. The 850 is 3.1.2, so it only gives you three channels in front and two channels from overhead. But that's $900. So, you know, if I were you, I'd spend the $1,250.
Yeah, list, that sounds good.
List for $1,500.
Okay.
Hey, everybody. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm here with David Vaughn from Sound and Vision Magazine and soundandvision.com, our last segment. Man, things have flown by really fast. And here to help them fly by even faster with such wonderful repartee is Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer and the giz whiz of all time. Hey, Dickie D.
Wow. How are you? You're doing a great job. I've had it on for the past couple of hours.
Oh, why, thank you so much. I'm glad I'm glad you've tuned in, and I'm always so thrilled to be speaking with you because you've always got such great, cool stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I have a fun gadget today. You know, I'm not an audiophile like you guys, and I know I owe you $20 because I've given in that stereo is not a fad. And it's anyway, I have a neat gadget that was at a Pepcom event a couple weeks ago.
And oh, yeah.
It's not exactly a smart home gadget, but something to make your home less dumb. And
hey, I'm all for making my home less dumb. That's
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, okay. And if you're not for installing things, and I'll tell you what, it's called SwitchMate, okay?
SwitchMate.
And the guy at the SwitchMate, he said, you can automate your home in a one-second installation. And
whoa.
I said, okay.
Show me more.
Yeah, this just locks onto your Switch, and then there's a Bluetooth app, and you bring up the Switch is numbered, and the numbers of the switches will come up on your phone, and then you can turn the lights on and off. You can set it. It uses Bluetooth. And I said, but
you mean this is a physical? This is a physical thing that actually
snaps onto your light switch. Okay. And I said, well, wait a minute. How does it do that? And he said, magnetically. And I said, well, how do you know everybody's switch plate is metal? My new ones are plastic. And he said, no.
The screws.
There were two powerful magnets that lock onto the screw.
Wow.
He said, I'm going to give you. He said, I'll give you two of them because you need one if it's a toggle switch, and you need a totally different one if it's a click up and down switch.
Right.
So it turns out in my house I have dimmers, I have gang switches, but the kitchen light was a single gang on-off switch, and I put it on. And I said to him, what gives this the power? And he said, well, there are two AA batteries in there. Mm. Well, first of all, the installation took 30 seconds. So not one second.
Not one.
You have to make sure that the light switch is in the up position and that the back of the switch mate is also in the up position. Mm-hmm. Then you just hold it near the thing, and the magnets are powerful.
Wow.
It pretty much grabs it out of your hand and slaps it onto the switch. Now, you can set it to welcome home, and then as you enter the house and walk through rooms, the lights will come on because your phone is there.
Yeah.
But there was one other neat thing is if you want your home to look looked in, you can roam through the house, set different times you want different lights to go on and off.
That's clever.
And even though your phone is with you, each switch mate has a memory built into it. So even though you're not there with the Bluetooth, it will turn itself on and off from within the switch itself.
That is pretty darn slick.
Yeah. And they are under $40 each.
Okay.
And right now, I see on Costco and Target, everybody has them for $34.95 right now.
Okay.
So it's pretty clever. And he said by Christmas, they will mate with Alexa. and several
Very
other.
Very good.
Yes.
So talk about the Star Trek future is coming upon us.
Lights on.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Now, here's a question I have for you. In my kitchen, I've got two light switches at opposite ends of the kitchen, and you can turn the lights on and off with either one, but then if you do it with one of them, then the polarity of the other one is reversed. It really bugs the heck out of me.
It should still work. That's just a switched light.
Yes, but, you know, in one case, one light would switch on by going up, and the other one would switch on by going down.
See,
it's a three-way switch.
You're absolutely right. I don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah. No, it would still work.
You
would just need it on one of the switches, because that one switch still controls on
or
off.
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense.
You know, this man is smarter than you told me.
Well, Dick, I thought when you said that you were going to make the house smarter with the switch mate, you were going to switch out our mates.
Oh, no.
Hey, look out who you're talking to.
Yeah, wait. That wouldn't work in my house. No. My house is smart right now because I'm not there. So.
Okay. Right. And my house is smart because my apartment is so small, I can pretty much turn on any light just by reaching out, stretching out really far.
Yes, indeed. Okay, I get that. Well, that's a pretty cool app, a pretty cool device. Not even an app. I guess it comes with an app, right?
It comes with an app, and it's called SwitchMate. And as I said, make sure you get it for the type of switch you have. And on Amazon, they have photos of the switches.
Yeah, okay. Well, very good. I might have to look into that because that's really pretty cool. And while it didn't take 1 second... You know, 30 seconds ain't bad, you know.
Are you totally automated throughout your house? I know everything audio is top of the line.
Exactly. But I'm not automated throughout my house. It's true. I'm not. Are you?
I have one radio frequency controlled dimmer in my theater. When I hit pause, the lights come on.
Oh, that's cool.
But other than that, I've been trying to talk my wife into getting like a Nest thermostat. She's all, no way. It'll be hacked. And, you know, I'll come home and the house will be 100 degrees. And I'm all, but, oh, well.
All right. Well, hey, Dickie D, thanks so much for being here. It's always great to talk to you.
You too, guys. And I'll talk to you soon again.
Very good.
Good seeing you, Dick.
Okay.
Thanks so
much.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye. All right. We got time for another call here. I am going to go to Michael in Yorba Linda. And as long as I get the right button, Michael, you're on.
Well, hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. I know we're short on time.
We are, so let's get to it.
So I'm excited. I just got the 2016 Vizio M Series.
Excellent.
I love it so far.
Excellent.
Yep. So I've heard you in the past recommend its predecessor and also the mode in which general viewing is best.
Yeah.
But I'm puzzled because it doesn't have movie mode. It has Vivid, and it has one called Calibrated. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I guess that I hadn't looked at the recent M series lately. You do not want Vivid mode, first of all. X that out altogether, never go near it.
Okay.
But it might also have one called Standard mode.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it does.
Now, it has one called Calibrated mode, and you would think that that means that it's calibrated, but it's not. I think Vizio probably tried to get it as close as possible to being calibrated. But doing that in the factory is only approximate anyway, because real calibration takes into account the room that you're in. And
sure.
The factory doesn't have your room in it, or the millions of others that they're going to sell. So, you know, you might give that a try, see how it looks. Normally, I think in the Vizios, they don't have a movie mode, but the standard mode is probably the closest.
Probably the closest.
And you want to also make sure that there's a color temperature setting somewhere in there, and you probably want it to be what's called warm. They might specify it in Kelvins as well, and you would want, if that's the case, you would want it to be specified as 6500K.
Okay. So for this particular set, it's not the high end. It's probably not worth having someone actually calibrate it for several hundred dollars, right?
I don't think so. Not in my opinion. Okay. We're just getting somebody in the chat room saying the Vizio recommends the calibrated mode. Let me pull back up the chat room here. Calibrated mode, especially for HDR, the fat vegan chef, contradiction in terms, has the P series, which is the upgrade from the M series, and they recommend the calibrated mode for deep black. So, you know, I'd try them both and see what you think.
And I would get like the Spears of Munsell disc or the Disney Wow disc and calibrate it that way. Just a self-calibration. You know, 80% of the way there. And it's going to look pretty good just doing that.
Absolutely. And that's like $30. So the Spears and Munsell HD Benchmark is the name of that disc, or Disney Wow, World of Wonder.
Okay.
And you get one of those and you run those. And I think the World of Wonder, if you're not familiar with video, that's probably the best one because it leads you through it step by step. So I would do that and set the basic user controls, and you'll have a beautiful picture.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. I really appreciate
it. Hey, my pleasure. Thanks so much for calling. You know what? We're out of time.
Scott, it's been a blast.
It's really been great. That's David Vaughn from Sound and Vision Magazine. I'm Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek at avsforum.com. Everybody, geek out.
Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.